Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180.
Midday 180.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
John Feinstein joins us to kick off the hour with the very latest from Augusta. John, how are you?
I'm good, Jonathan. I hope you guys are all well. They're starting at 8:30 local time, so that means it's a 9:30 Eastern time.
Yes, that's correct.
Everything for television.
Yes, everything.
Yep.
And that tells me there's a doubleheader somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a 7 o'clock game and then a 9:30 game on the East Coast.
Just your assessment of the Masters this year over the 4 days. What was your big takeaway?
Well, the big takeaway is that Patrick Reed won his first major championship and that he hung on down the stretch when both Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth made moves at him. And disappointing to me personally, I think to a lot of people, that Rory McIlroy just didn't show up on Sunday. I don't know what happened. I honestly thought Saturday night he was in great position to win. He played very well on Saturday. Finished with a birdie on 18. I know that he had worked very hard to put himself into that position because he hadn't really had a chance to win since 2011 when he shot the 80 on Sunday. So that's a huge disappointment, I think, for a lot of people. But Patrick Reed is a very good player who often doesn't get the credit for being as good as he is because he's not the most outgoing guy. He had some issues in college with teammates, got thrown off the team at Georgia. Wasn't very well liked at Augusta State. I like the guy. He was terrific to me when I was working on the first major. He's very honest. He comes right at you. There's no BS in him. And he proved that he could handle the pressure of a major Sunday when, in the past, really, he'd shown that he could be a great Ryder Cup player, but had not played particularly well in any major at all until last summer's PGA when he finished tied for second.
Do you think that the issues you talked about with him, are these overblown or justified with the amount of people who seem to not really like him on tour?
Well, I think, Chad, that they're not overblown in the sense that they happened in the past when he was in college. And there's this whole story about his split with his parents, that his wife, Janine, and his brother-in-law, who now caddies for him, are on one side and his parents are on the other side and the twain don't meet. I don't think those are untrue or overblown. What I do think is that if you get to know Patrick Reed, he's a straight shooter. He's not trying to, be liked. If you like him the way he is, that's fine. If you don't like him the way he is, that's fine too. I think he's much more popular in the locker room now than he was before the two Ryder Cups where he played so well. He told me that Phil Mickelson looked at him in the team meeting in 2014 in Glen Eagles on Saturday night and said, "We need to get to know you better," because he's one of these guys. He goes out on the range. He's always got his earbuds in. He listens to the same song over and over. And so people don't find him that approachable. He and the media haven't always gotten along because the media reported some of his past. And I like the fact that in 2014, after he won at Doral, third win in 8 months, he said, "I think I'm one of the top five players in the world." Well, I think we need more of that in golf. We need guys saying what they really think rather than just thanking the sponsors and, talking about how great the volunteers are. Say something worth hearing. And a lot of the golf media, because they're very sheep-like, what's he doing saying he's one of the five best players in the world? He's ranked 21st in the official world golf rankings, which are very flawed. And I liked him for that. And a lot of people gave him a hard time for that. So I think that to some degree, some of his rep is unfair. And I think to some degree, some of what's happened in the past is fair.
His pump-up song, by the way, Patrick Reed's, is Radioactive by Imagine Dragons.
Exactly.
Simon Kuharsky also listens to a lot of that song before soccer and baseball games.
Really?
So it, really?
Did you learn that elsewhere, Paul, or did you learn that when you read the first major, which I know you did from cover to cover?
No, I actually just looked it up to refresh my memory, because I thought I could ask you and you could hit it out of the park. Or you might say you didn't know, and I didn't want to put you on the hook.
No, I know only because I asked him when I was researching the first major. It's in the book.
There was some suspicion heading into that final round with that final pairing that there would be somewhat of a Ryder Cup feel to things. It also runs counter to the feel of the Masters, I would think, to a degree. What were you expecting, and how did it play out compared to your expectations?
I was really curious to see how the crowd would react, because Rory McIlroy, generally speaking, is one of the best liked guys on tour. And sure enough, on the first tee when they were introduced, you know, Reed got nice applause, but Rory got roars. And, you know, I remember thinking, this ain't the Ryder Cup. He's not going to hear USA, USA chants every time he makes a putt. It's a very different atmosphere. Obviously, a lot different stakes in play, and yet it didn't seem to bother Reed, and for whatever reason, Rory never got going. A terrible drive on number one, even after the big cheers, and then missed that short eagle putt at number two that really set the table for the entire day.
Yeah, and I thought Danny Willett got bigger cheers from the Augusta crowd than Patrick Reed did when he won the Masters. And John, I don't know if you felt this way, but it almost sounded like the patrons were a little bit happy when he missed that first putt that he had to two putt by about 4 feet. Giving him a tricky putt coming back. And you rarely hear that out of Augusta National. Now, there were cheers when he won it.
Right.
But you could almost hear a murmur of people almost excited that he had a tough putt coming back.
Yeah, and I think some of the TV guys too, right?
Yeah.
There's no question. Look, the fans are always going to be for Ricky Fowler against a Patrick Reed, and they're going to be for a Jordan Spieth against a Patrick Reed. I call Fowler, Spieth, and Thomas the Sunshine Boys. Because, you know, they're always happy for their buddies when they win and they come out to congratulate them. And I'm not being critical of them for that. I think it's a nice touch. And Fowler waited around for Reed when Reed was finishing, which is typical Ricky. He's a class act. But I think you're right, Chad, that they wanted to see a playoff, and they particularly wanted to see Fowler get in the playoff with Reed and win, because a Ricky Fowler win, let's face it, would be a much more popular win than a Patrick Reed win.
John Feinstein with us. John, the storyline, the backstory with Patrick Reed and his parents, and how they don't speak or haven't really seen each other since 2012.
Right.
You think Nance and the CBS crew are told not to bring that up?
100%.
What if Nance decided, I'm going to bring this up because this matters on the 18th fairway? Like, this is a big story.
Problem. Let me tell you something. Augusta National monitors everything on TV. You know, it's like Big Brother. A friend of mine on, I think, Friday in the press conference wanted to ask a question of Jordan Spieth right near the end of the press conference. And he'd had his hand up the whole time, and the guy hadn't called on him. You know, it's a little like being in school. And finally, he honestly thought the guy had pointed in his direction. So he asked his question.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan answered it very well. And about an hour later, he was called to the principal's office. Craig Heatley, who runs the media center, he's a member, called him in because he's sitting there in his office watching the press conference on a monitor, and said, "You jumped in at the end, you know, on when we were trying to get Jordan out of there." And my friend said, "No, I didn't. I've been waiting. Other people had been called." And then Heatley explained, "Well, it's hard for the guy up front to see if you're not in one of the five front rows because of the lights." And my friend had been sitting in the back, which they never told us that. And so if Jim Nance were to say, you know, everybody knows that Patrick Reed and his parents have been, not involved with each other for several years, and the Augusta State stuff and the Georgia stuff, there would have been a big meeting between CBS and the Masters. And you know that Augusta National has kicked people out of the booth in the past. Gary McCord got kicked out years and years ago. Jack Whitaker got kicked out. Now they wouldn't kick Jim Nance out. He's too big to kick out. But you know, there might have been a problem if he did. And of course, Nance it would never ever do anything to upset Augusta. A, because it wouldn't be good for CBS, and B, because he wants to be a member someday.
From the story perspective, Rory, you brought up McIlroy on Saturday compared to Sunday. I think that the talk of the career Grand Slam caught up with him mentally on Sunday.
Yeah, but I think it got it's funny because I did a story on him before the Masters, and I said to him, you get to Sunday and you're in contention and you have a chance. How are you going to keep the elephant out of the room? And his honest answer was, I don't know. He said, now in the past when I've been in contention in majors, I've been able to give myself a thought to keep myself in the present. Like, for example, at the British Open a couple of years ago, because winning the British Open was obviously a huge deal for him being from Northern Ireland, he said he had two words in his mind, process, as in just stick to your process shot by shot, and spot, as in put the ball in the right spot on each swing. And he was able to kind of fight it off. But Sunday he wasn't. Now he's starting to work with Brad Faxon on his putting stroke. And he just started a couple weeks ago right before he won at Bay Hill. And I think when he missed that eagle putt at two, all of a sudden, all the bad putts came flooding back into his mind from the last few years, and he just wasn't able to overcome it.
Ricky Fowler had that clutch birdie putt to put pressure on Patrick Reed. So at least we know he can close strong. He just could not get started fast enough yesterday.
Yeah, one over par after seven holes. You're right. And I think what happened is at that point, you know, sort of like Jordan Spieth the whole day because he was so far behind starting out, he began freewheeling, you know, and just firing at flags and figuring, because Ricky Fowler's at a point in his career where to him in a major, there's no difference between second and tenth. So he's firing at flags. He no longer was feeling the pressure that maybe he felt at the beginning, like McIlroy felt at the beginning, and hit some great shots and made some clutch putts, particularly, as you said, the one at 18 for birdie. But got started just a little too late. And that's sort of been his history, where either he gets started a little too late or can't quite get it done coming down the stretch. I say this every year. I think Ricky Fowler's going to win a major. I don't think it's going to be too far in the future. And it's one of those deals where getting over that hump is just really hard for him. And remember, Phil Mickelson was almost 34 before he won a major. Ben Hogan was 34 when he won his first major. Guys get over that hump at different times in their life. Not everybody's Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus.
John, Jordan Spieth, after his round, yeah, there's another one. Well, Jordan Spieth, after his round, said that he didn't look at the leaderboard until after he finished on 18.
Yeah.
Are you buying that at all?
You know, I buy it because I don't think Jordan's a liar, and I don't think he has any reason to lie. I think the reason he explained it was he was so far behind that he just wanted to kind of do what Fowler did the last 11 holes, go out there and just fire at flags, make as many birdies as he could, and then look up and see, you know, where am I? Now, I personally think that's a mistake. I think you need to know where you are. He bogeyed 18 anyway without knowing where he was on the leaderboard. Maybe if he knew he needed one more birdie, his approach might have been different on 18T. I don't know. I can't prove it. But I always think it's a mistake to not know where you are on the leaderboard. Most guys will tell you, you know, I need to know if you're in contention. Like Reed needed to know that he had a one-shot lead on 18T, that he had to make par, that he couldn't play too conservatively off the tee. So I think that's very unusual for Jordan. And I guess you would say, yeah, it worked out because he shot 64.
How difficult it has to be, if you believe that he didn't know where he was on the leaderboard, to avoid that. Because everywhere you turn on the golf course, it's strategically placed, those leaderboards.
Yeah, those are big scoreboards.
And they're right in front of you in some of those holes in the back nine.
Yep. No, they are. And I guess the cliche answer is you keep your head down. And you're right, because like when you walk on, for example, you walk on the 15 green, and there's that giant scoreboard to the right of the 15th green. And it's almost impossible, if you have any peripheral vision at all, not to see it. But if you're making, I guess if you're making a conscious attempt to not see it, you don't see it. Danny Willett told me 2 years ago that he birdied 15 and he heard this roar, and not really a roar, more like a gasp as he's walking off the green. And he turned around and they were just putting Jordan Spieth's quadruple bogey up on 12. And he was like, oh my God, I'm leading the Masters. And amazingly hit a great tee shot at number 16 because he went all of a sudden from two shots down to three shots up.
John Feinstein with us. John, yesterday I was thinking about the significance of the young Americans in golf right now. You have Patrick Reed, the most recent winner, Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth, the Open, Justin Thomas, the PGA Championship. Will the PGA capitalize on these young guys that are, what, under 30, all of them, that are Americans and they're winning at a high clip?
Yeah, and you can throw Fowler in there
because
he's so popular, even though he hasn't won a major. It's an interesting question, Jonathan, because I keep reading from and hearing from people that it's so great that Tiger Woods is back playing and that golf needs him. You know what? I know the ratings go up when Tiger Woods is in contention because non-golf fans do watch only when he's in contention. But I think overall what these guys have done in the last 3-4 years, these young players, and you add McIlroy to the mix because I think except in the Ryder Cup, he's easily as popular as any of the American players you're naming, that it's been great for the game. That the game, if Tiger Woods stood up today, I had this fantasy Thursday, by the way. I was standing near the first tee when Tiger Woods walked out on the first tee, and the place went nuts. And I had this fantasy that Tiger was going to get up there, they're going to introduce him, and he's going to say, you know what, folks, I was just kidding. I'm going home. But if Tiger Woods stood up today and said, you know what, I gave him my best. This is the best I can do, T32nd at the Masters, and I really only care about the majors. I'm going to just go home and try to spend more time with my kids. Now, that would never happen. But if that happened, or if he got hurt again, golf's going to be just fine for just the reason you just said, Jonathan. And I do worry that because the media and TV in particular focuses so much on Tiger, 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 that they're getting away from enjoying all these really good young players and promoting all these really good young players. Because not only are they good young players, they're good guys. I mean, I've told you before, I've never met an athlete I like more than Rory McIlroy. And Jordan Spieth's not that far behind. And Justin Thomas is a terrific kid. And Ricky's a sweetheart. And Patrick Reed's completely different from all of them. But I like him. And so when you turn on Golf Channel on the 3 days leading up to the Masters, you would think that there was only one player in the field. And that's not good. Because Tiger Woods isn't going to be around forever. And if they get so focused in on Tiger Woods, then they're going to lose this opportunity to build on these young players you're talking about.
I love your backstories with big topics. There has to be one with this. Tell us how the Augusta National Women's Amateur Championship came about, because not too long ago, women were not even being extended the opportunity to become members at that club.
No, they're up to three women now. I think it had to do with the changeover to Fred Ridley as chairman. Fred Ridley, it should be noted, has three daughters, and he was a very good amateur player, U.S. amateur champion. So during his career, he has spent a lot of time, I'm sure, playing with women in events and knows that there are women out there who are great players. I think he's smart enough to know that it's great publicity for Augusta to do this, even though, you know, two of the three rounds will not be played at Augusta. Only the last round on Saturday will be played at Augusta, and I kind of have an issue with that. If you're hosting the Augusta Women's Amateur, it should be played at Augusta, right? And because there's going to be a cut, some of the 72 women who qualify or get into the event won't ever get to play Augusta. So I have some issues with that, but I think it's slowly working their way at least into the 20th, if not the 21st century. It's the new chairman. And it's kind of wanting Fred to make his mark early, and this is certainly a way to do it. And I think the bottom line might be that the chairman has three daughters.
John, in the all publicity is good publicity department, Do you buy that ultimately in the long run it's going to be good for UFC that Conor McGregor threw an object through a bus injuring people and got arrested?
Chad, you know, my knowledge of UFC is right up with my knowledge of fashion. So I'm probably not the best person to ask. But I don't think, let me put it this way. I don't think it'll be good or bad. And the reason I don't think it'll be good is because it's not the kind of thing that are gonna, that's going to bring more people saying, oh, I want to see UFC because Conor McGregor is nuts. But I also don't think the core UFC fan is going to say, oh, I'm not going to watch UFC anymore because Conor McGregor is nuts. So I think it's sort of down the middle. I think a lot of people like me who are not UFC fans kind of roll their eyes and move on. But I think people who are UFC fans are going to say, oh, Conor McGregor, he's crazy. I can't wait to see him back in the cage.
John, the Predators won the President's Trophy this past week.
They did. It means they won't win the Stanley Cup.
So you first off, I guess you buy into that jinx that's out there. But do you think that they're the favorite right now, that they're the best team in hockey going into the playoffs?
Yeah, it's not so much a jinx, Chad, as that we all know. I mean, look at the Predators last year when they were the last team to qualify for the playoffs, and they ended up in the Stanley Cup Finals. And that's typical of the way the playoffs go. You get the hot goalie, you get on a little bit of a roll, and it doesn't matter whether you win the President's Cup or you're the eighth seed. You can win the Stanley Cup. It wasn't a fluke last year. 2014, the Kings were the last team in, and they won the Cup. So when I look right now at the playoffs, are the Predators the favorites? Sure, because they had the best record in hockey. But, you know, the Penguins are two-time defending champions. They know how to win. They have Sidney Crosby. They have a good young goalie. The New Jersey Devils are the eighth seed in the East. But can they beat Tampa in the first round? Yes, they can. Are the Predators vulnerable in the first round? Sure they are. I can't remember. Who did they beat in the first round last year? Was it the Blackhawks?
Chicago.
Who was the first
Chicago.
Seed? Yeah. So and the Blackhawks were the top seed, and the Preds beat them. So that's the beauty of the Stanley Cup playoffs, in that if you get in, you can win. And if you're the favorite, you can go out in the first round. So are the Preds the favorite based on the regular season? Yes, they are. Would I sit here and say it's a little bit like a golf tournament? Because do you bet the Preds against the field, or do you bet the field? You bet the field. Except between 1999 and 2002, when Tiger Woods won 7 out of 11 majors, did you bet Tiger Woods or did you bet the field? You would bet the field.
John Feinstein joins us each Monday. John, thank you for the time, and thanks for being flexible with the press conference we're carrying coming up.
No worries at all, Jonathan. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Okay, sounds great.
Take care.
John Feinstein with us every Monday.